Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Joining me in the studio tonight is tonight's co-host, David Bigalizen. David Michael Bigalizen brought 50 years of experience to each of his cases before his recent retirement. Tonight, he brings that experience to this broadcast. Late last night, I read a story in the Detroit Free Press in which a Dearborn, Michigan lawyer was detained when returning from a family vacation in the Dominican Republic. He was detained by federal agents, questioned about his clients here in the United States, and these agents questioned him about clients and ultimately asked him to give up his cell phone. He politely declined, citing the unfettered access to client files this would provide. What followed was a 90-minute back-and-forth verbal tussle between that lawyer and two federal agents who, and only after he allowed them to view his contact list, ultimately released him without taking his phone. For the 38-year-old civil rights and criminal defense attorney, it was a daunting experience that he said highlights a troubling phenomenon that's occurring across the United States. Lawyers are getting targeted for handling issues the administration of President Donald Trump disagrees with. As this lawyer put it, this administration is doing something that no administration has done. They're attacking attorneys. David?
The focus of our series has been the attack on the judiciary. That is an attack on the judges and the process of the law, and an attack on the lawyers and the legal profession itself. The focus has been on how this is a threat to the Republic and the future of the endurance of the Republic. 2 weeks ago, we focused on the practice of the elected district attorney, Brooke Jenkins, of a blanket challenge that she's issued against some of the judges in Superior Court San Francisco, that is, striking the judges from every case. We spoke about the effect that this has had upon the right to fairness in court and how it's contaminated the process of the court. Last week, we spoke about the direct attacks upon judges in state court and federal court. These attacks include threats of impeachment, threats of violence, and actual violence. These, too, affect the confidence of that people have in the court and how people feel about the courts. Tonight, we will be talking about the attacks that the administration is bringing against the legal profession.
Tonight, we conclude this series with a look at the administration efforts to stifle opposition by attacking law firms who represent folks seeking relief from the president's initiatives. In evaluating the use of executive orders to punish the firms, in directing the Justice Department lawyers to seek sanctions at every opportunity, or pull access to federal buildings just for questioning a practice. The object, of course, is not the lawyers, but to deny legal representation to anyone who might get in the way of the president and his initiatives.
What is the role of the lawyer? What is the role of the legal profession? Why is it important to question the government when its policies are hurting people? Why is it so important to have some of these big firms doing pro bono cases? Imagine you are wrongly deported. There are no lawyers to take care of your case. Or you are wrongly fired by outsiders claiming it was performance, but you're new on the job and have yet to have an evaluation or of any kind. Once again, there are no lawyers to take your case.
As always, we have a panel of outstanding experts here to help us sort these things out. It would be hard to envision greater expertise than what we have in tonight's guests. And our final and most important guest is all of you, and there's much to discuss. Our phone number here is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. We welcome your questions, and while you don't have to jump in exactly where we are in our conversation, we ask that your questions or comments be kept brief, be kept civil. There's a lot to talk about tonight, and do bear in mind that our guests are here to educate. They can't provide you specific legal advice about your case. They haven't seen all the facts.
John Kecker was called to the bar more than 50 years ago. He is one of the very best trial lawyers in the country, perhaps one of the best trial lawyers in the entire world. His firm handles white-collar criminal cases, complex commercial and intellectual property cases, intellectual cases, property cases, antitrust and securities cases. Clients go to him for what we call the bet the company case. If you're looking for the very best in criminal defense or in any other kind of litigation, John Kecker and his firm are first class.
Bob Van Est is a nationally recognized trial lawyer who frequently handles high-stakes cases for clients such as Google, Qualcomm, and American Honda. His practice ranges widely over the field of complex business litigation and intellectual property. He's tried cases involving patent infringement, securities fraud, trademarks, commercial contracts, and antitrust. Bob was inducted as the 31st member of the California Lawyers Association Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame in 2018, and he's been named a leading lawyer by Chambers USA and listed as one of California's top 75 intellectual property lawyers and top 100 attorneys by the Daily Journal.
Major corporations and leading law firms turn to Ehrlich Peters when they are in crisis. He's tried more than 50 commercial and criminal cases during the past three decades. He has a reputation for protecting clients when there are colossal damages, reputations, or even freedom hang in the balance. He's demonstrated this by the cases of note described below. His talents are not confined to practice or industry. They are based upon clients' need for pragmatism, storytelling, grit, and dogged advocacy. Ehrlich is a fellow of the American College of Trial Lawyers and the International Academy of Trial Lawyers. He's been named the Attorney of the Year by California Lawyer and the Recorder newspaper.
The 140-attorney firm of Kecker, Van Est, and Peters in San Francisco has been a leader on the issue of protecting the legal profession and hence the rule of law and those that it serves from an increasingly aggressive government. John Kecker, Bob Van Est, Ehrlich Peters, without further ado, let me welcome you to Your Legal Rights.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you, Jeff.
Just a second.
So let's start out. We've seen an increasing scope of direct attack on law firms. And as of the time we were working up this idea for the show, even as recently as a week ago, we had five of the largest firms in the country that seemed to be at the receiving end, but it seems to have continued, and it seems to have struck on a much smaller scale, small firms as well. Can you share a little of your insight on what's going on?
What's going on is that Donald Trump and his administration is trying to undermine the Constitution, undermine the system of checks and balances, undermine any ability of anybody to stand up to anything that Donald Trump doesn't want to happen. And that is not the way our republic was founded. It's not the way the Constitution was written. And it's absolutely terrifying. He's going after university, all kinds of independents. He's going after universities. He's going after lawyers. He's going after judges. He's going after the healthcare system. He's going after veterans by cutting off the medical care, and he's trying to become a dictator.
It seems that what he's, and from my view, it looks as though what he's trying to do is to stifle any dissent by taking away any of the vehicles people might go to and question what he's doing.
I think that's right, Jeff. This is Bob Van Est. It's very clear from these executive orders that what he's trying to do is intimidate the folks like our firm and all these great national firms from representing people that he's trying to punish. He's got sort of a lawless immigration agenda. He wants to pick people up without any sort of notice, without any sort of due process. And the people that typically stand up in those instances are lawyers and law firms. The big firms and lots of firms are doing a tremendous service for people, doing pro bono work, poverty law work for people that that Trump wants to get rid of. So his goal here, I think, is to weaken the legal system, sweep away dissent, sweep away adverse attorneys, and cow people so that he can pursue what I'll call a lawless agenda in immigration, a lot of other areas too.
Shall we talk a little bit about the specific threats that Mr. Trump has brought against law firms and the two polarized reactions the one reaction of the firms that have given up and given in to Mr. Trump, and the other reaction of the law firms that have chosen to fight.
Yeah, David, this is Elliot Peters. One of the things that's so disappointing is the firms who have given in and knuckled under. The firms who fought thus far have all won. Three different judges in Washington, D.C. entered temporary restraining orders preventing these executive orders from going into effect because they're plainly unconstitutional in at least three different ways. But other big firms have agreed to knuckle under, two of them without even having an executive order against them, went ahead and settled with Trump, agreeing that they would do things like eliminate all diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and agree to do, in two cases, $100 million worth of pro bono work for causes acceptable to President Trump. If all of the law firms stood up and stood together against what is plainly lawless and dangerous, we would be in a much better situation. So it's disappointing that they haven't done that.
Shall we talk a little bit more about the other threats that Mr. Trump raised against these law firms and what they meant?
Well, sure. This is John Keckert. The other threats were that they were going to intimidate the clients. He's trying to intimidate the clients. He's trying to send signals to people not to work with this law firm.
From federal buildings.
Take away their business and bar their lawyers from federal buildings. Federal buildings happen to be where federal courts are. The idea of barring lawyers from being able to go to court is about as absurd as it sounds, about as unconstitutional as it sounds, about as stupid as it sounds, but that's what he's trying to do.
Sounds like a shakedown to me.
It's a total shakedown. It's a total shakedown. It's extortion.
One thing I noticed, you listen to the head of Paul Weiss who mentioned how he expected that other firms would stand together when this started to happen. And instead, if one believes the memorandum that was circulated, he found that other firms were trying to take advantage of it and actually poach lawyers from their firm.
Jeff, this is Bob. I can't speak to the specifics of what happened with Mr. Karp and Paul Weiss, but I can tell you that there's been kind of an outwelling of support for firms. 507 firms signed an amicus brief on behalf of Perkins Coie. Our firm and many others have offered legal services and help to these firms facing executive orders. We've pointed out how unconstitutional these things are. I can't speak to what happened to Paul Weiss, but they didn't even make an attempt to get into court to challenge this. And I think what we've seen here in response to the letter that we wrote and the op-ed that was in the Times is just tremendous positivity and support. I would be very surprised if people were out trying to poach that early on in this whole thing. But be that as it may, I think the message we've been trying to get out, and I think it's increasingly getting out, is let's stand together. People have come together in these amicus briefs, and I do think that these most recent executive orders will be met with a challenge for sure. There was one that dropped again today. So I think more and more firms are going to see the success, and I'm hopeful that when the three judges that have the contested cases now rule, I'm certain they're going to rule these are unconstitutional orders, and that should provide a little bit of coverage and backbone for the firms going forward to get these orders.
There's really two ways that firms have tried to respond. One is to go through litigation. The other is to try to meet and confer and see if they can reach a middle ground. And that path has proven to be disastrous. We'll return to that in just a moment. We're going to break for just a moment. It's a very rare opportunity that's provided to us by KALW. Not many stations throughout the country would allow a program like this to hit the air. and look at the guests we bring you tonight, like every night. Let me turn it over to my friends in the next studio.
Well, we just couldn't have a better example of why you need to support public radio right now, community radio. We care about you here at KALW. We are obliged to you. Mm-hmm. We are responsive to you. We are responsible to you. We want you to support us at a time where what you put over the air is discouraged in some quarters. 800-525-9917 is our phone number. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. I don't know if I said this. I'm Angie Corver. She's Janae Darden.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Yeah, I'm listening to Your Legal Rights. And, you know, education is power. Being informed is power. And so I'm learning so much just listening to this episode. So even I work at KALW, but I'm also too grateful for just the things that I learn here. 800-525-9917 or go online to KALW.org and make a donation.
We are doing such important work here. That's not me, you know, blowing us up. We really are. Yeah. That's why we come to work every day. Mm-hmm. We really want you to stand up for us in the best way you can. And for some of you, well, thank you for being a monthly supporter. And if you are in a position to do so, please double your monthly support. 800-525-9917 or KALW 917 or KALW.org.
Yeah, and absolutely. Again, you know, give whatever you can. I always say when we do these membership drives, you know, every dollar makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. And we just appreciate everyone so far who has donated. And if you're thinking about it on the fence, do it. 800-525-9917. Go online to KALW.org.
Thank you.
A few places I can think of that would allow a program like this, guests like this, talking about current events that are so critical, not only the legal profession, but what we do for you. We bring this to you every week, and there's no place else that would let us do it. And speaking of the legal profession, we were talking before the broadcast, David and I, about one of the very early firms that were hit with these executive orders or these threats, who made an effort to meet with the president and work out differences. It didn't go so well. David, you want to talk about that?
Yes, I do. And I'm going to talk about it in the form of a question. And that is, why did the law firms, there were four large law firms that capitulated to Mr. Trump. Why did they capitulate? Why did they capitulate so quickly?
I don't know. You'd have to invite them in as guests. We obviously don't agree with that decision. According to what they said publicly, it was because they were concerned about their future. They referred to it as an existential threat. From what I understand, many, many of the lawyers at those firms not involved in firm management disagreed vehemently with the decisions, particularly given the terms that were required by President Trump, you know, performing legal services for him, eliminating all diversity, equity, and inclusion, really being humiliated, and I think in the long run, damaging those firms. I think they damaged their reputation with clients. I don't think clients want lawyers that don't stand up and fight. I think it's going to be harder for them to recruit talented, courageous young lawyers who want to stand up and fight. And so I really don't understand why they did it, but we don't agree with it. And we stand with the 506 other firms who filed an amicus brief in support of Perkins Coie. Because, you know, when you have already three different federal judges, two of them Republican appointees, one of them Democrat appointee in Washington, D.C., who have all granted temporary restraining orders, saying these executive orders are unconstitutional, they can't stand up. The risk of not winning your challenge against this executive order is not that great. I mean, if a law firm is facing one of these executive orders, I think they can have a high degree of confidence that if they appear before a righteous federal judge, regardless of that person's political leanings, these executive orders will be enjoined and not enforced.
If Mr. Trump is able to dictate to the law firms what sort of pro bono work they are to do, and it's a big, big, big dollar amount, wouldn't that also create conflicts of interest and preclude these law firms from doing other things that would oppose the government?
I would hope so. President Trump has said that he wants some of this pro bono work to go to the coal industry, the fossil fuel industry. I remember the days when people used to worry about climate change. President Trump doesn't worry about climate change, and he thinks anybody who wants to litigate about that is wrong. It's beyond imagination that it's gone this far and that he's even getting away with what he's getting away with. It's really awful.
We should also talk about the order that Mr. Trump gave to government lawyers on how they should treat private lawyers who are opposing the government. Why don't you speak to that as well?
You know, it's remarkable, David, to see the president trying to dictate what happens in the Department of Justice, right? For many years, we've had a great separation, independent Department of Justice, separate from the office of the president, carrying out business on behalf of the country itself. And now, essentially, we have an attorney general and a DOJ just carrying out the wishes of President Trump. And this latest directive on how to treat people that are legitimately and righteously fighting against wrongful government actions is probably a real low point. I really don't understand how folks in DOJ can put up with this. They are supposed to be protecting the country. They're supposed to be upholding the rule of law. For a long time, they've been a great example of a great national law firm doing great work. And now, essentially, they're nothing other than another agency working for President Trump. That's one of the biggest disappointments, I think, that lawyers in our country and citizens, too, should feel. He's turned that into a Trump organization appendage rather than what it's always been through 250 years, right? Independent, fighting for the country, regardless of what administration is in power.
Yeah, and if I can jump in, Bob, this is Elliot. I'm sure you have listeners of all walks of life out there, but you don't have to be a legal scholar. You don't have to be Benjamin Cardozo to understand how unconstitutional these executive orders are. For the government to punish anyone for expressing their point of view, for advocating for a political cause, for representing a client in court, for standing up as a lawyer for a criminal defendant or for a cause, it just blatantly violates the First Amendment. A seventh grader would know that. And to do that without any due process, to say, oh, you lawyers, you're not allowed in federal buildings. We're going to instruct federal lawyers, employees of the federal government, not to speak to you because we don't like your point of view. And without any due process, that violates the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to deprive people of legal representation, which is guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. So it doesn't take much subtle thinking to appreciate how unconstitutional these executive orders are, which is why it makes it all the more galling that law firms have rolled over and in some cases surrendered before they were even hit with an executive order. They were lining up to hand over their dignity and their time and their freedoms to this president.
I can't think of anyone who expressed it better than in today's op-ed piece, jointly written by Lawrence Tribe and my friend Erwin Chemerinsky in the New York Times today. We should all be very afraid. It doesn't matter if the barred attorneys or the mistakenly deported immigrants may eventually prevail. These matters will take a very long time to wind through the legal system. In the meantime, the deported immigrants are languishing in El Salvador's prisons, and the attorneys may remain barred for a long time. The Trump administration ends up winning with the long delays.
Well, that's exactly right. And now what we have to worry about is whether or not the Supreme Court, which has indicated its willingness to look at some of these temporary restraining orders quickly, as they just did about the Venezuelan folks that were deported to El Salvador. They reversed Judge Boasberg's orders. They said that you should have used some different procedural method, which will take forever. How these people down and how five people in Texas are going to get lawyers and get a habeas corpus filed. I mean, it's really scary when you realize how much of the Supreme Court seems to be under President Trump's thumb. That's what we have to figure out. The Supreme Court, and then there's Congress, which is doing absolutely nothing to resist what's going on. It's a Republican Congress. They're maybe beginning to show some signs of life, but we're not seeing the balance of power that is supposed to be happening under the Constitution of the United States.
Or close. Remember that before he became president, then-citizen Donald Trump did a major shakedown of the Republican Party. He funded opposition for folks. He came out and stumped for people that would be supportive of him. And nobody's willing in the party to stand up to him. So there is no opposition within the Republicans, and they hold the majority in both houses.
Jeff, I think that, this is Bob, I think that's one reason why you're seeing such a vigorous attack on lawyers, right? I think the Trump people have figured out they've got Congress cowed and in the corner. The one place they can't suppress, at least they haven't yet, is the judiciary and our system of justice and the rule of law. They're trying desperately to overturn that too, attacking judges, as David mentioned. You guys had a show last week on that. Now they're going after the lawyers. They want to really weaken the system of justice so they can pursue this lawless agenda they've got. I don't think they're worried about Congress. I think they're worried about the courts, and they're worried about judges upholding the rule of law, which so far the district court judges have done. There have been a lot of great district court rulings, not just on these executive orders, but on deportations, on funding, on terminations. The district judges have really issued some remarkable opinions. John mentioned Judge Boasberg's opinion, but there have been dozens of other very fine ones too that are sitting in the district court or maybe on their way to the court of appeal. So I think the Trump people realize that right now they consider their biggest enemy being the federal district judges, many of whom they appointed in Trump's first administration. So that's why all this effort is ongoing, and that's why I think we're going to continue to see these executive orders and probably more attacks on judges, too.
I'd like to speak more generally about the role of the legal profession as it has to do with the preservation of the republic. And for the moment, I advert to the motto of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers: we are liberty's last champion. That is, how does the role of the legal profession affect the preservation of the republic?
Well, lawyers don't always represent popular causes or people. Sometimes lawyers have to have the courage to stand up and represent people who are not popular, who are criminal defendants, who causes may not be popular with a particular administration, and you have to stand up to the government. And there's lots of brave lawyers around this country who walk into courthouses and stand up to the government in all kinds of cases, and it's really the bastion of liberty. And maybe there's people out there who make fun of lawyers and don't like lawyers until they need one, until them or their family members or someone that they know and love has had their rights violated, their job taken away, they've been sexually harassed, they've been charged with a crime they didn't commit, they've been thrown in a Salvadoran prison where the president of Salvador says oopsie about it and thinks it's funny. Then you need lawyers, and you need lawyers who have a backbone and a spine and are willing to stand up to the government.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Let me turn it over to Elizabeth from Richmond. Elizabeth, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
I have two questions. One is the cases where the law firms did not cave, can those cases be judge shopped? And then my second question comment is, justice is not guaranteed when you look at what happened to Stephen Donziger. So I can see why firms and lawyers would be quite nervous about what could happen to them. So that's my comment on fear in the legal profession. And, also you can tell me if anybody in the legal profession has banded together to help Stephen Donziger. Okay, so that's it, and I'll take my answers off the air. Thanks.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for joining us. Let me turn it over to my esteemed guest.
This is John Kecker, and you've come to the right place because Elliot and I represented Steve Donziger for some part of his ordeal. That's a separate story to tell, and so I won't go into it now. But this is a man who was sort of persecuted by Chevron for work that he did for natives in Ecuador. But the Elizabeth, your question is right. You can't count on the result, but what you can count on is having a lawyer who's willing to fight for you and is not intimidated. Every time you go to court at representing somebody who may be unpopular, who the government is after, the government wants to hurt, the government wants to deport, the judge looks down at you and says, who's representing this horrible person who did all these things according to the government? And you need a lawyer who's happy to say, I am, Your Honor, and I am going to defend this person's rights. If you can't do that, if a lawyer can't do that, they shouldn't be a lawyer. And if a firm won't allow its lawyers to do that, then the firm shouldn't exist, as far as I'm concerned.
And I can tell you, as a criminal defense attorney, David is one as well, it's not always, not everybody's innocent, but you have to stand for the principle. You have to stand for the presumption of innocence. You have to stand and give everyone their day and make sure they're treated fairly by a system that's huge and overpowering. And now that huge overpowering menace is turned on the lawyers themselves, which leaves an awful lot of folks, innocent and guilty alike, at huge risk. Let me turn it to Michael in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thanks for having me. I have a few questions and I can take the answers off the air, but I think about the role of bigotry as a uniting force. The president seems to poke people with what they fear the most, you know, xenophobia, racism, homophobia, transphobia, what have you. And as an African-American, I've lived in a dystopian legal landscape pretty much since puberty. And so, yeah, I could tell you stories of things that happened to me. You've seen George Floyd and other videos, and you wouldn't believe it could happen in this country. And it's always fascinated me that African-Americans seem to be like a canary in the coal mine for what everyone else will get at some point. Also, just the general vacuuming up of all the wealth upward, the winner takes all nature of this economy seems to really cow people, I think. And I've heard it's quite hard to be a young lawyer these days in terms of the benefits and costs of that. So that's all I wanted to say.
Was that Michael, Jeff? This is Bob. Michael, you make a good point. One of the key principles of these attacks on the law firms is eliminating efforts at diversity, equity, and inclusion. Right, for many years now, we've seen real progress, not enough for sure, but real progress in diversifying some of these firms. And DEI's been a very, very strong and powerful influence. A lot of the large companies have adopted it. They've asked the law firms to implement it. The law firms have done that. And one of the biggest goals, I think, of these attacks on law firms is by the Trump administration is to eliminate DEI. And as you saw in some of the deals that were made by the firms that did cave, they've agreed implicitly or explicitly, to eliminate DEI efforts. They mask it as merits hiring is what they call it. But what it really means in Trump world is we're eliminating DEI. So, Michael, you make a great point. It's current with these EOs.
And, Michael, I'm old enough to remember the days when these big New York law firms who are now worried about losing clients and so on wouldn't hire Jews, wouldn't hire black people, wouldn't hire women. Bob's point is exactly right. There's progress has been made.
Hey, this is Elliot. I want to jump in and just say a word about that, too. The idea that DEI efforts, that efforts to diversify a law firm are racist, are just so completely wrongheaded. We believe in diversity at our firm because we are stronger and better with a lot of different points of view represented among our lawyers. And we have clients, both corporate and individual, who are come from all different walks of life and different parts of humanity, and they appreciate being able to be represented by lawyers who come from diverse backgrounds and have diverse points of view. So it's not some kind of racism, which is just, I think, a cynical way to describe it, but it actually is an objective that makes a business better and stronger to have a diverse workforce, because our clients do. And we're better for it. I just wanted to say one more thing to Jeff, commenting on something you said earlier about today's editorial by Erwin Chemerinsky and Lawrence Tribe in the New York Times, because it's horrifying, and they're absolutely right. And what they were saying is, in light of these two Supreme Court decisions this week, it would be possible for this administration to make a person, not just an alien, but a citizen too, to make someone disappear. They come to your house, they take you, they put you in a bag, they put you on an airplane, they fly you to El Salvador, they say, terribly sorry, we can't get you back. And it's really, really frightening to think that that is governmental behavior that the Supreme Court appears willing to tolerate.
Or at least to throw up technical ways of saving it. Oh, you brought it in the wrong courthouse, things of that nature. So they can duck having to look at the actual substance of what's happening, which is pretty horrific. Let me turn it to Matt from Ukiah. Matt, if you're still with us, you're on the air.
The call. Thank you. I just wanted to touch on one thing with the DEI. I appreciate the person that said their firm is very diverse. That's what I would characterize as growing their diversity organically. I think when you mandate diversity hiring, that's racism. And more importantly, if it's not merit-based, I don't want to step on an airplane knowing, well, gee, they got one person flying from Bangladesh and two from Puerto Rico and 17 from the United States. And no, you want the best people for the best for any position. It helps in your firm, rightly so, because people want to be represented. They know they're understood, and I get that. But when you're talking about heavy machinery, you're talking about aircraft, you're talking about other things, you want the best person for the job. End of story. Thank you for taking the call. No racism.
I agree with you about, this is John Decker. I agree with you about best person for the job. It's just, as you probably know, Michael, sometimes the best person for the job, it can't be judged on just a couple of criteria. Sometimes there's more criteria to find the best person for the job than one or two things.
And diversity means a whole lot of things to a whole lot of people. But the reality is, if we're all of one mindset, we're at a huge disadvantage. I think to a certain extent, we're getting some echo. It might be at your end, gentlemen. But to a certain extent, some of the folks that have commented on the mindset of the administration and the way it is so divisive, reminds me of something I would have read from the old existentialists. So this is hell. I'd never have believed it. The torture chambers, the burning marl, they're old wives' tales. There's no need for red-hot pokers. Hell is other people. And that's what they're going after. Let me turn it to George from San Francisco. George, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. Now, you know, there is a remedy in this.
Hello?
We seem to have lost George. George, please do call back. It's good to hear from you again. But let me take... We somehow flipped, and I lost the call. Let's go to...
Hello?
You're on the air. Caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, my name is Carolyn. I'm a female engineer, and I understand what the last caller said about picking the best person for the job, but he does not offer a solution for when you have inherent bias. And I have experienced this as an engineer. I'm old enough. I'm near retirement, where I'm in a meeting, I'm the engineer on the job, and someone turns to me and tells me I like my coffee black, because they're assuming I'm the, I don't know, go-getter for the coffee. And so I would like to know, for people who say they're against DEI, how do you level the playing field? How do you deal with, I used to, when I worked in retail, I had clients that told me, lawyers, licensed lawyers, who told me they could not show up in a court in a pantsuit. They had to wear a skirt, which is obviously a bias. What's that got to do with anything? And so I want to know, if someone is against DEI, how do you level the playing field? How do you allow people in who are qualified, but you have a group of people in power who are against them? And I can take my answer off the air. Thank you.
You know, you bring up a good point, and let me add to your point. Not only do you want to make sure that people from various backgrounds have opportunity and are vested in the system, but you also want those folks to know that people who look like they do, who have similar experiences to what they have, are going to be involved in decision-making for them, whether it's the person they work for at a corporation, or the person who's giving them money to launch their enterprise, or the judge before whom they enter in court. If all those folks look the same, then not only do these other folks lose the opportunity to be those folks, but they can't expect that they're going to have a fair shake from these folks. We'll be back in just a moment. I do want to turn it over to my friends in the next room who have been gracious enough to wait and to keep us on the air.
And we're so glad to have you with us. This has just been a dynamite show. Everyone here in the control room or in the membership room is just sitting and listening. You don't see us shut up too often, but we are listening. 800-525-9917 is our phone number, and there's something you can do with that, which is to call it and become a member of KALW. If you appreciate the bravery in these days of covering topics like this, this is when we need you to stand up and get behind us. 800-525-9917 or the website at kalw.org. Janae Darden.
Hey, you know what I appreciate about this conversation is that we're hearing people of different opinions, mm-hmm. and the discussion is very civil. When so often, maybe when we're watching cable news, it's just like a wrestling match.
Because that's what they're selling.
Yeah, and sensational. And it's actually refreshing to hear a civil discussion, a civil discourse of disagreement. And so I'm just happy that, you know, at KLW, we provide those type of discussions, those type of spaces. And, you know, to help us to continue to do that, call 800-525-9917 or go online to klw.org. And speaking of diversity and equity and inclusion, I'm so happy that at KLW that, you know, we believe in having diverse voices. And I've said before that I don't know if I would be able to be me on the air, because I've worked at other stations, you know, and KLW has really, you know, opened the doors for me to be myself on air and to bring content that other stations wouldn't air.
Yeah, isn't that remarkable this late in the game?
Yeah.
But it's true. And I love to turn on KALW and hear the variety of voices and the variety of opinions. And as I said about this show, just the bravery in tackling topics that, let's just say, are touchy these days.
Very.
You know, people are going after public radio. Stand up with us, please, and be part of our community as we are part of yours. KALW.org or 800-525-9917. If you're a monthly member and you can consider doubling your monthly donation, boy, is this the time to do that.
Absolutely. And again, you know, give whatever you can. Definitely, you know, be a monthly donor or one-time donor, a one-time donor this time and then another one-time donor next time. But and again, 800-525-9917, KLW.org, and hit that donate button. It's easy peasy.
We want you on board, 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
And let me open it up, talk to George in San Francisco. You're back on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights, and I'm glad you called us back.
Well, good. Are we coming through?
You are loud and clear.
There's a potential remedy that we haven't discussed yet, which would consist in applying the amendment.
I was sitting there going like, what?
Yes?
And when you say the amendment, which amendment do you refer to?
In the index on the Constitution, what is it, number 15?
14.
Hello?
George, we're with you, but we're not really with you. In what way are you talking about applying the 15th Amendment?
Well, we haven't even begun to discuss it tonight. So the question is, in the few minutes that remain, how can we get a forum for the discussion of incapacity as a rationale for limiting this precedent?
Well, George, I want to defer to my guest to answer this, but in my opinion, if the president controls the courts, if he controls the party that has the majority in Congress, if he controls the administration and all of its arms, including the Justice Department, who's going to invoke any amendment? Do you folks agree?
Yeah, Jeff, this is Bob Van Nest. George, you raise a good question, but frankly, I don't think it's an issue of incapacity here. I think the issue is revenge, retaliation, dictatorship, consuming all power. I really don't think we're looking at an incapacity issue. Maybe we will one of these days. But right now, right, all of our systems are under attack. I mean, he's treating us as the enemy. Lawyers are the enemy. Judges are the enemy. Congress is cowed, so the Democrats are the enemy. But I don't think we have an incapacity problem. I think we've got a bigger problem, which is upholding the rule of law and our system of justice in the face of a very vigorous and concerted attack, which continues to this day. So, we're looking at the other amendments, if you will, the 14th Amendment, due process, the 5th Amendment, the right to counsel, and as Elliot mentioned earlier, I think those are the amendments that we and the judges are relying on to uphold the rule of law.
George, thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights. It's good to hear from you again. It's been a while, and I hope we talk again soon. But I would like to turn it over to Monique in Berkeley. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to the comments about DEI. I don't want to characterize or be too general, but often when someone complains that DEI is racist, I agree with one of your experts who said that it's cynical. Opposition to DEI can be described as racist, which is not a charge, but a perfectly legitimate descriptive term with a real meaning. Because once you introduce the idea of competence and quality, or when it comes to something serious like being a pilot or operating heavy machinery, that it needs to happen organically, what we're talking about is the racist idea that diversity brings incompetence. conflating those two things is exactly why that opposition, in my opinion, is in fact racist. And that's all I wanted to say about that.
I just want you to know I agree with you. The attack on the law firms and saying do not have any more DEI is actually a racist attack. All of the law firms are obeying the letter of the law with regard to equal opportunity, and this new threat is just racist.
But it's also, this is Elliot, and this kind of isn't intended, at least on our part, to be discussion about DEI, but DEI here is a pretext, is being used as a pretext by the president to go after these law firms and say, oh, you're bad. I need to do something about you because you have DEI programs. I mean, the government had DEI programs. Most companies have had DEI programs. And whether you like them or not, that's not a basis to punish and intimidate a law firm and say, we're not going to give your lawyers access to courthouses and federal buildings. We're going to instruct federal lawyers not to speak to you. We're going to go to your clients, and if any of them have federal contracts, and say, we're going to terminate your federal contracts if you do business with this law firm. I mean, really, the two have nothing to do with each other. I think that DEI is being used as a pretext to just punish law firms for the reasons we've talked about, to intimidate them and amass power and avoid court cases adverse to the administration and to the president.
Monique, thank you for joining us, and I appreciate your viewpoint and that you share it. Let me turn it to Peter in Florida. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for inviting me. You know, you said something earlier, reminded me of one of my favorite quotes from Clarence Darrow, lost causes are the only causes worth fighting for. I thought, I think he said that was the Scopes monkey trial. But meanwhile, I just want to mention something, because the lawyers there, you see, eminent, and I know a lot about the Kennedy assassination, and the one little footnote associated with that is a lawyer from San Francisco who offered to defend Jack Ruby. His name was Melvin Belli, and I'm just wondering if any of you knew him. He only died in 1996. Sure. Did you know him, and did he have a reputation there?
He had a huge reputation. He had a beautiful house where he had six dogs. He had a beautiful office that was a block from our office, not this one, but a predecessor office. And Melvin was a wonderful lawyer. He was not a great criminal lawyer, shouldn't have been representing Jack Ruby, as far as I'm concerned. But Melvin Belli was a total San Francisco character.
And we borrowed a tradition from him.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Melvin Belli, when he would win a personal injury case, he would hoist on his flagpole above his office a pirate flag, skull and crossbones. And so we have adopted that whenever we win a case in our office, we send an all-office email around, and it's always entitled Pirate Flag, and then we tell about the victory.
I'm glad to hear that that is the tradition you carried on. I was afraid for a moment you were going to tell us about a guest spot on Star Trek.
No. Melvin, during the 1989 earthquake, he had a beautiful brick building just down from ours, and the earthquake hit and shook everything on October 17 during the World Series, and I ran outside after feeling the shake, and we were okay, and at Melvin's office, which was made of brick, there was a sign that said Birthplace of Freemasonry. And below it was this pile of bricks that had fallen off the wall. So the masonry had become free.
Peter, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. I appreciate that you got us talking and got the stories going. We have about a minute left for any... David, you worked up this area pretty well. Is there any last question you have?
I just have a comment. Donald Trump, I hope you're listening to this show, and I hope you've written all of our names down. We are not afraid of you.
day.
One of the things that troubled me in studying this whole area is the typical meetings for those that tried to be conciliatory, those that approached the administration, and hearing stories of how they entered the White House and met with an orchestrated response that was already scripted and choreographed in a way they had not prepared for. Want to take
well, David, David or Jeff, the worst thing a lawyer can do is be unprepared, right? Shame on them. I'm not sure why anybody would think a negotiation with Donald Trump would go well, or an agreement with Donald Trump would be observed or executed fairly. So shame on them if they didn't prepare. We're not engaging in any of that. We're on the side of the guys that are fighting and winning, and knock on wood, they'll continue to do so.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've discussed the myriad threats to the legal profession and with it, the rule of law. Our guests tonight have been John Kecker, Bob Van Nest, and Elliot Peters of the San Francisco firm of Kecker, Van Nest, and Peters. I want to thank you all and welcome you and hope that you will all join us back again. Please be sure to join us next week on Your Legal Rights, where, as always, beginning at 6 o'clock on Wednesday night, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks again to our guests and tonight's co-host, David Begeleisen, and our thanks to all of you for joining us. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.